Before we start this podcast, Chris has a message he'd like to share with our followers on social media.
As you guys know, I've been quite unwell recently, and I just want you all to know that I'm now feeling much better, and I just really want to thank you for all your kind messages. It means so much to me.
Take a journey through the paranormal and the unexplained with the Paranormal Guys.
Hello and welcome to the Paranormal Guys podcast. I'm your host Kieran, and I'm joined with Chris.
Me!
And we are back. We have not done a podcast for quite a while due to technical difficulties and unforeseen circumstances, but we are back and we are aiming to do our bi-weekly podcast and bring it back to you as soon as we possibly can. So, without further ado, let's get started. This week, we're going to be discussing our investigation that we conducted at 30 East Drive back in May. This was an investigation that we've always wanted to do, and we finally got to do it. And quite frankly, I was quite disappointed. Would you agree, Chris?
Yeah, it was, there was nothing there, was it? Well, at least in our opinion, it was rather boring, I would say.
It was a very quiet evening, I must say. One of probably the most quiet investigations that we've actually done. Certainly I've done in my lifetime. For a location that is so steeped in paranormal history and paranormal occurrences, one would have thought there would have been a lot more happening there. So Chris, do you want to give a kind of a breakdown of what happened when we arrived at the location to give the listeners an idea of how we set up, etc., went from there?
Yeah, sure. So basically, as we arrived, as you guys know, we done a vlog, which was quite fun to do. When we got there, obviously, we had to go collect the keys from the woman next door. The weirdest thing about this woman is she seems to almost add fuel to the fire to like make hype it up. Like, oh, this is going to happen. Oh, you never know, this might happen. And she seemed to point out things in specific, you know, specifically to make you think, oh, hang on a minute. Like, for instance, like, you know, with the door, for instance.
What Chris is referencing to is her reaction when we knocked on the door and we asked for the keys. I was expecting her to come and show us around. I was hoping to get an interview, that sort of thing. But she was having work done in her garden. So she didn't want to leave the builders in there or whatever. And then, as she said, you know, do X and Y when you go into the house. Make sure you turn the lights off, you lock the door when you leave. Oh, and don't forget, the door opens by itself. That is something that happens quite a lot, and the spirits like to do it. Instantly, Chris and I looked at each other and went, what on earth is this woman talking about? She then went inside to get us some tea towels so they could obviously do the washing up. And both Chris and I looked at each other and were just like, what the hell is going on? Exactly. And I said to Chris, is this woman for real? Like, what is going on? And then, carry on, Chris. We went into the house, and then what happened after that?
Well, the funny thing is, when you went into the house, the weirdest thing was, is you did get an eerie feeling.
Definitely.
Like, it was like, oh, okay, this is a bit weird. But it's almost, it's like your dad said, it's like the house has stood alone for so long that when you walk in for the first time, the atmosphere is quite oppressive. It's like, it wants company. Is that the way to describe it? I would probably.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the minute you walk in the house, as Chris said, that just the atmosphere is so oppressive, you can cut it with a knife. It's so thick. And you actually get the feeling it's really creepy in here. But the impression that I got was when they tell you to never meet your heroes or never meet a celebrity that you really like because you'll just be disappointed, that's what it felt like. I was really nervous about going into the house because the house itself is a character. And it was almost like meeting someone that I've always wanted to meet. And going in there, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. This is amazing. And you've got the adrenaline pumping of where you are. After being in there for about 10 minutes and the atmosphere changes and relaxes, you're like, oh, is this it?
Exactly.
you know, you think I'm in 30th Drive, this is amazing, and then the novelty starts to wear off very quickly.
I think one of the weirdest things is that you walk in there and all of this is movie prop stuff, you know, from the guy who made the movie, you know, and you almost like, I think the tension you get is, oh my god, I don't want to touch anything, I don't want to break anything, because if I do, it's not going to be good for me. Do you know what I mean? So you sort of walk in and you're like, oh my god, I don't want to touch anything. But
that's not from a paranormal aspect, is it? It's not from, I don't want to break anything because I'll be cursed. It's, I don't want to break something because this is someone's property.
And I think that's what creates that tense atmosphere when you first walk in. You think, oh my god. And then obviously, as you walk around and stuff, you get used to everything. You think, well, I'm really going to hit anything unless I do it deliberately. And
well,
then
this is it.
It just, that atmosphere just dissipates. And then you're like, okay, so now I'm in a normal house. That feels like my grandmother's house.
Exactly.
And that's
exactly.
It. You're relaxed as anything.
I think the main thing was because the way the house was laid out. And because it was laid out in like a 60s theme to create the atmosphere that you were back in the 60s, then you did just feel like you're in your grandmother's house. And that any minute she was going to come out with a tray of cakes or something and be like, have a cake. You know, and when we were sat there downtime speaking to my parents, because we forgot to say my parents were guests on the investigation.
Yeah.
When we were just sat there on the downtime having a conversation, you did hear things and you kind of assumed that it was something, but because you're relaxed, you're not tuned in to whatever is happening. Like, for example, when we were doing the filming, you said you heard footsteps in the corridor.
Yeah. That was probably one of the only things that I can honestly... I mean, even Jess was like, wait, what the hell was that? And Jess doesn't, you know, she don't flinch for anything. She's just like, yeah, whatever. But even Jess was like, wait, that's weird. But then you think, hang on, there's people living next door. Could that be their vibrations just coming through the house? Do you know what I mean? So,
well, I mean, this is very true. I mean, certainly, to be fair, throughout the night, we didn't really hear much. You could hear her TV through the wall, which my parents picked up on quite quickly. And they were out in the garden for a wee while because it was the start of the summer period, so the nights were
early May.
You know, it was early May, so the day was getting longer and the nights were getting shorter, so people were out in their gardens a lot longer, and you could hear people going past on their mopeds and this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you had that element of knowing that you're in a council estate.
Exactly. Definitely.
There wasn't that. I'll admit that I didn't hear too much of banging around or anything.
Surprisingly.
That's definitely next door.
Surprisingly, we heard a lot less than we thought. But going back to those footsteps, like, as I said, even Jess was like, wait, that's weird. And I only heard it once. But then the funny thing was it wasn't like it happened once. It was like, I heard it once, if you know what I mean. But you heard it on a separate occasion as well, when we were upstairs. So you were like, wait, hang on a minute, what's that?
Yeah, I heard what sounded like something dropping on the linoleum of the kitchen, and then I did hear a shuffle in the corridor shortly after that.
Exactly.
But it was quite a substantial tap on the linoleum. It wasn't like a house settling, it was as if something had been dropped on it, and then when I went to check, there wasn't anything there.
Exactly.
I think one thing I found really interesting about the location was, we'll get onto the door in a second.
Yeah.
But one of the main things to happen in that location that investigators have commented on is seeing a face / figure in the mirror in the hallway. And something that I found quite interesting was when Jess took a picture of the mirror when we initially got in there, she sat on the stairs, took a picture from the similar angle as to where people had seen this image.
Yeah.
She caught what looked like a face, and we were there for a good 10 minutes discussing this picture, trying to work it out, trying to come up with an explanation for it.
Yeah.
And then Jess went, let me try something, got the tea towel, cleaned the mirror so there was no smudges on it, took the picture from exactly the same angle, and there was nothing on it, which clearly stated to me that it was a smudge in the mirror.
Because, I mean, You think, how often... I mean, all right, yeah, they probably go in there and clean, but I don't think it's probably done on a regular basis, because you've got to kind of... they got to build that atmosphere. If you went in and it was absolutely fucking sparkless, you'd be like, okay, this doesn't feel creepy. Do you know what I mean? So absolutely. They probably clean it up a bit, because they have to, but they ain't going to go out of their way and, you know, clean mirrors and all this, because they want it to feel creepy.
Yeah, I think that's key. I think they go in and think they vacuum and they hoover and they dust or whatever, but I don't think they go to the extremes of cleaning the mirrors or the windows or anything like that. So I think a lot of the phenomena is down to the... I don't want to say mistreatment of the house, because that's the wrong word, but not like the cleanliness of the house. So there's the shapes in the window and the shapes in the mirror could easily just be dust or smudging on the glass.
Exactly.
Which is making people think exactly. it's clearly pareidolia. And lots of pictures and lots of statements have come out recently, because I've followed quite a lot of the pages on Facebook, of people going in there saying, I've seen this in the window, I've seen this in the mirror. And I'm thinking, how have you seen this? Like, yeah. It doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't make sense.
Exactly. And another thing that is also claimed to be in this house is the pictures move by themselves. Now, we experience that. But again, that could easily... because all the pictures that move are on the wall that is connected to the neighbor's house, which is active. Now, living in a house, like, you know, council houses and stuff myself, what the walls are so bloody thin in some places. And if someone moves something or stomps around, I've seen it myself, a picture will just suddenly slowly, gradually begin to tilt, you know, slightly to the left or slightly to the right. And then eventually you think, wait, I didn't remember hitting that. And then you think, ah, it's them next door. They're moving it around. Do you know what I mean?
All it takes is a slight vibration, even from the people inside the house
exactly.
themselves.
Exactly.
If you've got a lot of people, say, these events companies will have 10, 15 people there.
Exactly.
If you've got all those people milling around, what's to say the vibrations isn't causing one of these pictures to go skew with?
Oh, exactly. If you've got freaking 15 people walking around, that'll move the pictures and, you know, it grates.
Yeah, exactly. And I know for a fact that the night before we were there, there was a group of people, I believe it was actually a film crew there, filming alive for that week, and they ended the night before we were there. So there's already, know for a fact that there was about 20 people within that house anyway.
Exactly.
And I find it highly unlikely that she went in and cleaned the house before they left.
Exactly.
After they left, beg your pardon. So she wouldn't have noticed that the picture was squint, so it could have easily have been left from the people before.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
You know, getting on to the main attraction of the night, which was the door moving, which we were able to debunk really, really quickly.
Yeah.
But initially, what were your thoughts when we initially heard that click of the door? What were your thoughts going through your head?
Well, like, I mean, your missus, she's bloody smart. She went, well, that's a bit weird. That door has moved after she said it. Do you know what I mean? So Jess wasn't fooled at all. But me and you, like, you jumped out your skin because obviously I was watching you. Like, I got to admit, my hearing sort of just, you know, just amplified. I was like, every little sound I could hear. So I was like, wait, that is weird. But do you know what I mean? It was, for that moment, that brief moment, we were like, oh my God, we've just caught one of our biggest paranormal pieces, a door moving by itself. Well,
yeah,
you know, that wasn't actually the case at all, was it, to be fair?
Unfortunately not. No, I think, because we'd had such a quiet night leading up to that, and then with my mum asking out, and there wasn't any idea that the atmosphere was building or anything. It was just completely out of the sudden. Suddenly there's this loud click and no one's expecting it. And it's almost in response to a question. And then it wasn't till, because it came from the corridor, that's why I jumped, because I was stood right by the door.
Yeah.
And then and then suddenly my brain clicked, that's the door that's gone. That
yeah.
has to be the door.
But the weirdest thing about that, though, was you went, come on, what was it, Emma, wasn't it? You went, come on, Emma, why didn't you try opening the door like you have done for any other people? And literally, as soon as you said that, door went, ka-chum, and we were like, what the hell? I mean, that wasn't the language in that room at the time, but we were bloody startled, you know what I mean?
I think, obviously, that was just pure coincidence that happened at that time. Exactly. But what we established was that the door frames to the building itself aren't straight, and the doors don't sit into the door frames properly, and all it took was the changing of temperature, because the heating kept going on and off, and it would happen when the heating would go off. With the changing of the temperature in the house, the wound expanding and contracting, then therefore it was making the door move, and we were able to distinguish that quite quickly. And obviously with the vibrations of us moving, our body heat, all these combinations of things happening causing the door to move on its own, we were able to distinctly dispute that quite quickly.
However, in that room something very odd did happen, didn't it? Shoelace undone itself, which was so weird, because my shoelace is like, you know what I mean, the moment they came undone I felt them hitting my leg, but before I'd gone into that room, you know, my shoelace, because obviously I don't know 100%, but the shoelace was suddenly undone when I came out the room after I'd been sat in there, because I was sat in there on my own for what, a good 5 minutes, wasn't it?
While we were doing the pieces to camera,
because obviously you, Jess, your mum and dad stayed in the main bedroom where we were originally, and I was sat in the room to see if anything would happen. But the weirdest thing was the door didn't move, but when I came out, me and you both noticed my shoelace. We were like, wait, hang on a minute, what?
But I remember saying it just really flippantly, going, dude, your shoelace is undone.
Yeah.
Like, as in, don't trip up. Your shoelaces are undone. And then you're like, no, they shouldn't be.
Yeah, it was just, because obviously, like, guys, I mean, if you've seen my shoes, I mean, I don't know if you look at shoes. I mean, if you do, that's a bit weird. But during an investigation, like, if my feet are ever on camera, look how tight I have those shoelaces. I have double knotted, freaking pulled as tight as possible. But the weirdest fact was, a double knot was undone, and it was just hanging freely, which I would say to me, that was probably the weirdest experience I had in that house, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly strange. I mean, lots of people would be able to go, well, it's just happened to come undone. But
yeah,
before you'd gone into that room, we had done the pieces to camera for the documentary, and we looked back at the footage and we zoomed in on your shoes, and we can clearly see that the shoelaces done up before you went in the room.
Is that absolutely?
So it's not like it was undone and you just didn't notice.
I mean
that's a very clear personal experience, because it's something that happened to yourself, and unfortunately we didn't catch it on camera, so on paper we can't say
it's
official, but
as a personal experience,
it was a great personal experience to have.
Definitely.
And I think, looking back on the investigation, like, we did the experiment of where Jess slept in the room, and she said she heard a couple of clicks, which could have been the door opening again, or a couple of taps. And you know, you can hear, we caught that on camera of her reacting to the taps and things like that.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, it wasn't till I looked back at the footage that I caught a voice.
Exactly. That voice is quite creepy. Yeah,
I will say. It's quite clear, because it says, I ask Chris, do you want to ask out? And then you said no. And then there was like a yes afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the funny thing was, is almost me and the voice are synced up. So that's what gives it credibility. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it can be me, so to speak, because I'm almost synced up with that voice completely, that it would literally be impossible for me to go, well, it's not impossible, but you know what I mean, like, the way it's done, it's like I'd have to almost be speaking in two voices at the same time, if you know what I mean.
But what I was trying to explain to Jess when I first heard it was, why would Chris say no then yes? Doesn't make sense.
Why would
he say it like that, when I've clearly asked him a question and he's clearly gone, I've gone, Chris, do you want to ask out?
You've
clearly gone, no thanks, and then yes afterwards.
Yeah, like yes.
And it And it's like, well, why would you then counteract what you've just said and going, yes, I'll do it, and then not do anything? Because then my dad asked out.
Exactly, because to be honest, if I wanted to do it, I would have gone, no thanks, actually, yes, I will. And then I would have just asked out, do you know what I mean? I wouldn't, there'd be no...
And it was like a whisper as well. And
yeah,
we would have reacted had we heard that at the time, but the fact that we didn't hear it at the time makes that a little bit more credible. Now,
exactly.
EVP is something that can always be taken with a grain of salt. And EVP is a very interesting subject, which we'll do a show on that separately. But EVP itself is incredibly interesting, and we in my old group have caught some really compelling EVP, which I've shown to parapsychologists, and they've said I can't explain that. That's weird, and for me that is compelling evidence enough for a parapsychologist to say I can't work that out, and then for us to have that evidence. So EVP is something I'm really interested in, and I find it really intriguing that you can't hear it at the time, but then you hear it afterwards.
Because to be honest, like we've spoke about before, EVP, good old EVP recorder, to me is my favourite piece of paranormal equipment. Like people go, oh, it's the thermal, it's all this. But no, I prefer the good old-fashioned recorder where you catch a voice and you think, wait, what? Especially if you can't explain it. Do you know what I mean? Then it's like, it's more of a rush than seeing something on camera that you think, well, that's just a piece of dust. Do you know what I mean?
And as clear, if it can be as clear as day. When I heard that, there wasn't a moment where I went, what was that? It was, holy crap, I've caught something. Like,
exactly.
It wasn't like it was... where we've had a lot of times going, I'm not too sure about that. That could be this, that could be that. That, you know, it was straight away. You went, no, this went, yeah. And I was just like, right, okay, I've definitely caught something there.
That's what I'm saying. It's just, EVPs definitely, they are something else. Like, when you get a pure EVP, like, I mean, when you get something that's a bit, you know, it's like, but when you get a pure voice, that's just, and then you kind of think, that is weird. That is very weird.
Yeah. I think a good example of... I mean, we're getting a little bit off topic, but a good example of the EVP was the one that we caught, that you caught at your house when you were doing that experiment.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is on our old group's YouTube page. So if you want to check that out, go to Torchlight Paranormal. You'll find that on YouTube. You can find the clip in there. Back to 30 East Drive, I left there... not feeling overly excited about it anymore, and not feeling fulfilled, if that makes sense. I kind of felt left with an empty feeling of going, well, that was just a waste of time.
No, that makes sense, because I mean, I kind of felt the same, because you know, like, we got to the point where in the morning we were just like, it was 7:30, we were just like, oh my god, we just want to go home. It got to that point where we were just like, I've kind of had enough of this place. Not because it's haunted or anything, but we were just like, this has been a very big disappointment. We've travelled all the way from Somerset, Bristol, all the way up to Yorkshire, and it was one of, as much as I hate to say it, probably one of the most boring investigations I've ever done in my life.
And the thing is, we were all so excited about it because it showed so much promise. If you're listening to this podcast and you're going, I don't know anything about 30 East Drive, basically 30 East Drive is supposedly home to Europe's most prolific poltergeist in the Black Monk. Supposedly it's a black monk that Cluniac monk from the Pontefract Abbey, who supposedly raped and killed a young girl. He was then caught by a mob and he was hung from a tree that sits just behind the house, and then he was thrown down a well which supposedly sits underneath the living room of the house, and his spirit supposedly haunts the house. Now, I did lots of research prior to going to 30 East Drive and found no evidence of any monk that had ever been murdered or hung or anything like that. The only person hung in the area who was a man of the cloth was a priest who was hung during the Civil War. That was the only thing I could find. So I don't think there's any credibility to that story. So do I think the Black Monk of Pontefract exists? No, I don't. Not at all. But I mean, that brings me nicely to talking about like other poltergeist cases, which would you know, when you think about poltergeists, you've got to think about what is a poltergeist. Now, I have my own opinions about what a poltergeist is, which could be different to other people. But the word poltergeist comes from the German for pesky spook or pesky ghost, which basically is a spirit which just causes havoc wherever it goes. Now, a poltergeist is invisible, it can't be seen, but can be interacted with, and it can move objects. My personal opinion is that a poltergeist is a build-up of energy from people, usually from teenage girls who have just hit puberty, so they're releasing a lot of hormones, they're releasing a lot of energy, and I believe that energy gets built up and is moving objects, like kinetic energy. I don't think it's telekinesis, but I do think it's, you know, a build-up of energy. I don't think it's a spirit. So when we look at 30 East Drive, for example, the main target of the hauntings was a young girl who had just hit puberty. So therefore, I think a lot of the activity within 30 East Drive was the build-up of energy from Diane, who was the youngest daughter who had just hit puberty. All the energy seemed to be focusing around her. I can't explain the legend of her being dragged up dragged up the stairs by her throat. I think that's just fabrication.
To be honest, though, with that stuff, I think that most of it probably never happened. Like, I don't want to just, like, you know, take a gigantic poop on 30 East Drive. But what I'm saying is half of that stuff, to me, probably never happened at all. It was probably journalists at the time making stuff up. Do you know what I mean? Film crews that were going in there to talk to this family. It was probably them making stuff up just so they could hype it up and get better reactions from their stories in newspapers, if I'm honest with you.
Well, a big thing that comes down to what you've just said just made me remember that it was during the 60s that it happened. And it wasn't, it was 66 that it started, and I believe it wasn't until, I think about 67, 68, that she actually got the newspapers involved. And so she had all this media coverage. I'm not sure what kind of horror films came out around about that time, but I know for a fact it wasn't The Exorcist or anything, because that came out later. But when you look at the case of 30 East Drive, you've got a young girl who is being plagued by a poltergeist, the family's being plagued by this haunting, and then, what, I want to say 10 years later, you know, further down the country, you've got the Enfield poltergeist, where two young girls are being haunted by a poltergeist that is terrorizing the family. They get newspapers involved. You've just had The Exorcist come out, which is one of the biggest films, horror films to ever come out in that time, one of the scariest films ever made. And you've got all the media hype around that. You've got films like The Shining, which would have come out. You've got the book, you know, Stephen King's book and that came out. And so you've got all the kind of media coverage already of all these movies coming out. Plus this media coverage from something that's happened further up the country with a family who's being plagued by a poltergeist. And suddenly a family down in London are having exactly the same, similar situation.
Exactly my point.
And I do think the media play a massive part in creating these stories.
Of course they do.
And I certainly think we had a discussion in, I think it was our last episode, where we talked about paranormal TV shows, and yeah. I do think that the TV and media have exploded 30 East Drive into something that it's not.
Yeah, because I mean, if you're going there, anyone listening, you're going there, don't just go, oh, the paranormal guys have said this is this. Go there and experience it for yourself. We might have just, as they say, gone when there's low activity. So you might go there and you might experience something that'll blow your mind and be like, oh, well, they're talking a load of rubbish. But you've got to think, if we went when there was low activity, we wouldn't get much anyway. But if you go and you experience something, honestly, just go and enjoy yourself. See it from your point of view, not what we've put into your mind. Go there with a fresh, open mind and just think, right, I'm here. I'm going to enjoy this myself and see what happens.
Again, going back to what you said, something you've just highlighted there about going in somewhere with an open mind. That's not only going into 30 East Drive with an open mind. That's going into any investigation.
Exactly.
If you... I find that if you go into an investigation with a closed mind of thinking nothing's going to happen, nothing will happen.
Exactly.
And I think the best experience that I can say to that is when I was up in Aberdeen, I was investigating with my old my first paranormal team, East of Scotland Paranormal. We went to an old council building, which was called Provost Skene House, and we investigated there with quite a famous local author who had written a book about the hauntings of Aberdeen, and he came along. And he was telling us the whole night about all the different stories that he had heard from this location. And I instantly went, there's nothing going to happen here. Like, I'm not convinced there's anything here. Yeah, it's a lovely old building, and you know, I know the history of the area, and I'm like, nah, nothing's going to happen. And quite rightly, nothing did happen. And I left there going, yeah, well, I half expected that because I didn't expect anything to happen. And I think if you go in with a closed mind, you're not going to notice things. Now, people would argue that if you went in with an open mind, you're more susceptible to things happening. And by that, I mean, you're going to assume that the knock downstairs is something paranormal because you want something to happen. But that's not necessarily true. If you go in with an open mind, you're going to go in and go, well, there was a knock down there. Let's investigate it, find out what could have caused it. And if we can't find an explanation, that's when we go, that's interesting.
Exactly. You have to apply some science to it. You can't just go, oh, that's paranormal. You have to think, right, this is a piece of wood, like going back to the door. This is a piece of wood. The door frame is not even bloody straight, and it seems to react every time when the heating goes off. So you sort of, if you apply scientific method to it sometimes, then you think, yeah, you know what, that's just wood being wood. But then when you get something like that voice that goes, yes, then you kind of think, well, that's unexplainable. That is interesting. That's the word I would use. I wouldn't say, oh, that's paranormal. Myself, I would say, and you and Jess, we go, that's interesting. That is the word we tend to use, is interesting.
But I'm going to stop you there, because the word paranormal means not normal.
Exactly.
So technically it is paranormal, but it's not paranormal in the respect that we want it to be.
Exactly. So
when if you ever hear us saying that's paranormal, it just means it's not normal. And Chris is right, the word that we use is that's interesting. And it's not to say that we think it's something paranormal, if you like. We go, that's interesting, we can't quite explain that. And with more in-depth detail, then we might be able to come along and say, well, actually, by looking at the footage, I've gone over the footage again, and I can see that, you know, it was Chris did say something. You know, I could see his lips move at the same time. It was Chris. He didn't realize he said it. You know, we've debunked it. But when we can't debunk it, that's when we go, that's more than interesting. A good example of something like that is back in 2010, when I investigated Breen Down Fort with Torchlight Paranormal.
Yeah.
We caught what sounds like a little girl crying on camera.
Yeah.
Now, the only
this was
female
before my time, by the way. I wasn't there.
This was well before Chris's time. We were filming down a corridor. There was a gate in front of us, so we couldn't actually get down the corridor. The only female member of staff, if you like, was Jess, who was stood right beside me. And if you heard her speak, you would have been able to hear her very clearly. I'm filming down the corridor. I say, if there's anybody here, make contact with us. Come and do something. And as soon as I say that, you can hear what sounds like this little girl sobbing. And it is so clear, it's so crisp, and we didn't react to it because we didn't hear it at the time. And trust me, if we'd heard it at the time, we would have reacted to it. I showed that piece of footage to, I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to plug him as much as he gets plugged already, but a certain parapsychologist made famous from a certain TV show.
You've kind of just given it away anyway.
and he said that he asked if we had been able to go back to replicate it, and I said unfortunately not, because they don't allow investigations there anymore. And he said, judging by the footage and from what you've explained and the situation that you've explained, then he finds that paranormal because he cannot explain it. There's no explanation for it. He goes, unless you can go back there and recreate it and recreate the situation exactly and get the same results, then we can say that there's a natural explanation. Because from looking at the footage, I would say that's paranormal because you can't explain it.
Exactly.
And I think that is really, really interesting. And with 30 East Drive, you get a lot of these explanations that people can't explain. And I look at them and go, yes, you can. You can explain that very easily because this is what's happening.
Exactly.
And when you say it to people, they go, that's not true because this, you don't understand the situation. So I can see the situation. You're not investigating it.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, I'm not being funny, right? Throughout the night, with every little thing that was significant, me, you, Jess, and basically everyone that was there, well, your mum and dad, basically, we, every little thing, okay, what's that? Let's go see. Oh, what's that? There was never a moment where we heard something go, you know, like a bang, and we just thought, nah, okay, and just sat there and carried on investigating, like, you know, ignoring it. We just literally go, right, I'm just going to do that, you guys do this, I'll just go see what it is. There was never a moment where we just left the house to creak, because in an old building like that, you can't, you have to investigate everything fairly, because the moment you don't, that's like, now you look sloppy, because you're not going to see what it is, and it could literally be anything unless you go and physically look at that part of the house and go, yeah, there's nothing here. It's just a house setting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think when I first started investigating, I'll admit, you know, I was nervous. I was scared of being in a location. And I'll admit that we didn't always do that. Another example, going back in time again, 2009.
We're way back in time. That's 10 years ago. Jeez.
10 years ago. Just before Jess and I moved from Aberdeen down to Bristol, it was actually the day before we left, we investigated a place in Aberdeen called the Tolbooth, which is an old prison. It's like a large tower. It's attached to the courthouse, and it's an old prison. And we were doing a Ouija board experiment with Dr. Rachel Ironside, who I've talked about before in previous podcasts. And she was doing an experiment with this, I think it was a German psychologist, doing like a demonic chant. And we were doing the Ouija board while we were doing it. And I mean, you know my beliefs on Ouija boards. You know, I don't believe in them. So anyway, we were doing this, and we were doing it just for a bit of fun because we were in the toll booth, somewhere I'd always wanted, like, ever, you know, I grew up in Aberdeen, I'd never investigated before, and I always wanted to, and I did. And while we were doing the investigation, both Jess and I, and now this is Jess saying it, both Jess and I heard the jingling of keys coming from the corridor. Now, there was no one there, but we were sat there going, shit, we just heard a jumble of keys. What was that? But we didn't get up to go and have a look, which we should have done in hindsight, because then we'd be able to go, we've just heard a jumble of keys. Why do we hear a jumble of keys? Oh my God, you know, let's find out what it is. Yeah. Looking back, we should have done. And during that mini investigation that we were doing, we had a historian there.
Mm-hmm.
He was clarifying all the information and stuff that we were getting. So we were doing the Ouija board, and then we were just getting random letters, and we were like, right, okay, you know, this is subconscious. We're moving the cup to random letters, and then we looked over to the historian, and he was looking really puzzled and really confused, and we asked him what was wrong, and he went, you've just spelt out the name of a French jailer who was a jailer in the toll booth.
Yeah.
And Jess and I looked at each other and went, well, we didn't tell them that we'd heard the jangle of keys because we were obviously in the middle of the investigation, but we looked at each other and went, hold on, we just heard a jangle of keys, that could work out together.
Exactly.
But following the investigation, we didn't research the name of the jailer or anything like that, which we should have done to see if it collaborated. That is our naivete of just starting out investigating.
Exactly.
Now we would do that.
Yeah.
You know, if we'd find that sort of information, we would go out and research it and try and find out the information on it.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And I think that's something that's really, really interesting. Like, if you're going to get into investigating, don't be so naive to think that if you investigate, then that information is gospel that you find during the investigation.
Yeah.
Doubt yourself.
Exactly.
I think that's a big thing to do.
Exactly. You can't just basically go in there and go, you know, and be like, not really be thorough. Like, after an investigation, if a name comes up, you go research that bloody name. You don't just go, oh, yeah, well, that guy says he's here, so, or she's here. Yeah, it must be the case. You go and check up, and if you can't find any records on something, you think, oh, that's just a story. But however, if you do find something, then it becomes more credible that that is interesting.
And I think what was really interesting about the location was that you had requested not to do any research on
yeah.
it, despite me getting on at you and on at you to do research.
Yeah,
you
but
said, no, I don't want to do anything.
It works because
yeah.
if I go in there and Kieran's and Jess, they've done all the research possible, and then something happens to me, and they'll just go, yeah, it's just made up. But then if I say, oh, I've heard this name, or instance, then suddenly Jess and Kieran go, oh, Jesus, that he died here in whatever, you know, then it's kind of like, oh, my God, adds more credibility. But the reason I do that is just for that reason. I go in there with a completely open mind. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I know the basics of the stuff, you know. But I intentionally make sure that I'm closed off from it. So if something happens to me, then, and you guys can back it up, sweet. If you can, then it's interesting. And then it's like, well, that is very odd.
I do think the downside to what the investigations we've had in regards to that is that we've just done two locations which are incredibly famous within the field.
Yeah,
and that no matter how hard you try, you are going to know some stuff
exactly.
about the locations from watching TV shows, from
exactly.
literally if you just type in the location, you'll get reams and reams of information about that location. What's interesting about our next investigation, which I can say what it is because it's not a secret, is we're investigating the Georgian Pilgrim in Glastonbury. The interesting thing about that is that you don't know anything about it.
I don't know anything.
I know very little. I know the basics of the building. I don't know the main purpose of the building or anything like that. So I know like very little information about it. So going to this investigation, it will be interesting to find out what we can catch from it and what information we can get from it and see if it can tally up with anything that we can find on the internet. The only thing I can find on the internet is literally this is a brief history of the location, and then it goes into the history of Glastonbury rather than the history of the,
yeah,
the actual location.
Yeah.
So I think when we went to the Ram Inn, it was difficult for you not to know anything about what was going on. I mean, you tried to not research stuff, but you still
yeah.
knew the
still knew
general
the
history.
Of it.
Yeah,
yeah, still
exactly.
know the basics of it. It's not like, I mean, anyone who's in the paranormal field knows the basics of Ram Inn and 30 East Drive. Do you know what I mean?
More so now because
yeah.
the media have blown it up.
So I'm saying, but like where we're going next is truly going to be different because I know nothing about it. Do you know what I mean? I know absolutely diddly squat about it, whereas you know a little bit. But it'd be interesting to see what actually happens there because I'm intentionally not researching anything to do with it. Just because if I start researching it, then I'll get the basics. And once you get the basics for a building or a location, that's it. You can then just build on that. But I know nothing about it.
I mean, I growing up, I went to Glastonbury a lot, and even now living only 45 minutes away from Glastonbury, we go quite often. So I know Glastonbury really, really well.
Yeah.
But I have never actually set foot in this building before. And all the years I've been going to Glastonbury, I've never set foot in the building. So it will be really interesting to go to the location having never, ever been there before. And it will be similar to obviously 30 East Drive because I've never been there before.
Yeah.
But I had seen so much on it that I knew the layout of the building just from watching what I'd watched. I felt like I'd been there. But with this place, there's not even any really footage about the location. So
yeah.
I don't think it's really been investigated that much before. So
yeah. Should be an interesting one, that's for sure.
It is going to be good.
move.
So all in all, if someone had said that they're looking for a location to investigate, would you recommend 30 East Drive?
What, going by my personal views or by going by the actual location itself?
Going from, first of all, the location itself.
Well, yeah, I'd say freaking go for it. You know, have a blast, see what you catch, and have some fun. Personal opinion? Good God, no. This is the most boring, bloody place I've ever been. There's just literally... When we got to the point of after the investigation, you guys, you know... We basically were just at the point where we were like, hang on a minute, it's 7:30, can we post these, can we knock on the door and give these keys back? We were just sick and tired of the place because it was just, well, dare I say it, boring.
Wow, this is absolutely true. I think I would be inclined to agree with you. There's a lot of locations that we've investigated, or I've investigated as well, that I would love to go back to try and recreate it. I mean, the RAM, one of them. I've been there 3 times, you've been there once. But mm-hmm. I would like to go back with just us again, just to see if we can recreate what we witnessed. Mm-hmm.
But for East Drive, I certainly East go Drive, 4 hours on the bloody motorway again. Just
absolutely
nothing.
Not. I would never go there again.
No.
I think it's a waste of, personally, I think it's a waste of money. And I think that a lot of locations have started popping up which claim to be Britain's most haunted house. Like, there's a place called the Poltergeist House.
Yeah.
There's 30 De Grey Street that suddenly popped up. And since the success of 30 East Drive, I think people are going, oh, my house is haunted, come here, because I know I can make money off it, because there's these people that wander around in the dark with cameras that'll be happy to pay ridiculous prices to come into my house when there's nothing there.
But honestly... After 30 East Drive, someone could say, oh, my house is so bloody haunted, man. Last night I got thrown down the stairs. And I'm like, yeah, I just don't care. I just don't care. Do you know what I mean? I'm literally at that point after 30 East Drive because it was so boring. I would literally just go, no, I'm not paying anything to come into your house. I just, do you know what I mean? It's just, no. I'm not dumb enough to do that again. Do you know what I mean?
I would have been inclined to agree with that. Right, guys, I think that is us for our discussion on 30 East Drive. I don't think there's any more that we can really say on the matter.
No, not really.
Head over to YouTube and you can watch our documentary to get our true beliefs on 30 East Drive and also get the history and the location and the investigation. And you can follow on Facebook, where you can catch up with all the live streams that we did on Facebook there as well. But guys, that's
don't
it for
forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram as well, at Paranormal Guys, just where we will chat. And if you want to ask us questions, even when we're not podcasting, just freaking throw them at us and we'll do the best we can.
Yeah, you can send us emails at paranormalguys@outlook.com as well, and we will answer your emails the best that we possibly can. And that's just something that we want to try and get into and open it up to you guys. I mean, our followers on Twitter are very interactive and we love that. We just kind of want more of that. But we're going to endeavor to try and get the podcast done on a fortnightly basis going forward. And I just, again, just want to apologize for the lack of content recently. But until next time, guys.
Catch you later.
Take a journey through the paranormal and the unexplained with the Paranormal Guys.